Right, so next talk is Eric and Roger.
Thanks. Great to see so many of you here. Didn't expect this amount of attendance here, but it's good to see so many people interested in a topic like database-driven API tools. First, let me say a few words about myself. My name's Eric. I'm a software engineer at Fulfillment Tools, and in my free time, I'm an open source maintainer in the GraphQL space. I mainly work on GraphQL and Python, so that includes the libraries like Graphene and Strawberry. And let me say a few words about Strawberry first. Strawberry is a GraphQL framework which enables you to easily build GraphQL applications in Python. It was created by Patrick Amigno, and it follows an implementation-first approach, which is a subset of code-first GraphQL libraries. And it's basically inspired by data classes and really makes you implement a GraphQL way, GraphQL API in a very Pythonic way. And Strawberry offers integrations for Django, SQL Alchemy, Pydantic, and more. And if you've been in the Python space and you see Python, Django, and SQL Alchemy, you probably know where this is headed a bit. Just out of curiosity, who here has used or who is using Python actively in an API project? That's nice. And who here has used GraphQL in Python before? Okay, not so many. Maybe I can inspire a few of you to give it a try in the future. But let's get back to the topic and have a look at today's API development and how many of you probably develop your APIs. And that is using an API-first approach. So basically, you create a concept for something you want to add to your application. In this case, we have an example API of a user and a post, for example, for a blog application. And you can see you have a couple of types, a user type, which has an ID, and username and the list of posts, as well as a post type, which consists of course, the title, the content, and you can also fetch the author for a post. And down here, we enable the user or enable any API consumer to fetch users from the API, in this case by ID, and it will return a user. And this is what you start off when doing sort of API first. You create a contract, you say, this is our API, so the consumers know how to use it, and then you start implementing it. So basically, in Strawberry, implementing this API would look something along the lines of this. Very similar, as you can see. You can see the user class, you can see the post class. And then to resolve the posts of a user, you add certain data resolvers. Like over here, you call the post service to load the posts of a user with the given user ID. And you do the same for your queries. So down here, you add a resolver to get a user by its ID. And all of this is manual. You have to add it step by step. And usually, in order to be able to do that, you need to implement the methods that are called here. In this case, we have a service layer, including a post service, a user service, and this service layer, again, needs to access the database below that to actually fetch the data. So after declaring all of this, you again have to make another declaration step and declare some database models. In this case, I'm using a Django flavor to just declare the models. And over here, we have the models for user and post again. As you can see, they're very similar. And they, again, describe how the data is mapped to SQL Alchemy and to a SQL database, I'm sorry. And if you map that to SQL, it would look something like this. And if you remember the schema I showed you, it's very similar, especially in this overview. And the question I always have when working on applications like these, where you have a strict layer separation, is doesn't it feel kind of redundant to declare your types two or three times with minimal differences in the fields? Okay, I'm not going to argue against clear separation of concerns in applications. That's an important pattern, and it has its sense. But in very CRUD-heavy applications, just pulling your username through with the same type through all of your layers in your application can sometimes feel exhausting, and it can take up a lot of your development time you could use for other valuable things like actual features. So I wonder, doesn't it feel redundant to do this a bit? And let's examine this further a bit at first by looking at the control flow of such an application as the one I've shown you. So right here on the left side, we have a sample query, which just gets the user of the ID 1 and fetches all of the posts associated to that user. And this query is usually passed by a GraphQL execution engine, which then calls the appropriate data resolvers you have defined in your schema. So in our case, it was the user resolver. And then next, the user resolver calls the user service to actually fetch the user from the database. And then the data flow goes on to the object relational mapper, the Django models I've just shown you, to generate a SQL query to actually fetch the user from the database. So in this case, we can see select ID username from users is 1. So next up, we need to fetch the posts connected to the user over here. So once again, after the user is resolved, the GraphQL execution engine goes ahead and resolves the post fields of the users. And again here, the user post resolver is called. It invokes the post service to get all of the posts from the database. And again, another SQL query over here is formulated. So when you build such an application, basically you need all of your service layers, you need your database access layer, and you need your schema layer. And then you need to glue it together using a lot of glue code, right? Calling all of the services from each other. And this is where database-driven APIs come in. Because the paradigm I've just shown you basically has a workflow from the left side to the right side, right? You start with an API schema, and you end up at a database schema, which fits the kind of API you want to provide to your consumers. And as we've just seen, for many cases, like the one over here, the database schema already contains enough information to infer an API schema from it, right? We have the database types, for example, strings. We know primary keys are IDs in our schema. We know the relationships. We know, for example, by foreign key relations, we know which kind of types are connected to each other in our GraphQL schema. So basically, in database-driven APIs, we want to go from this to this and actually infer the API schema from what we have in our database schema. In this case, for our strawberry-based approach, we would want to take this Django model we formulated for our database schema and somehow generate the GraphQL schema out of it. And for strawberry Django, it's as easy as replacing the code with this. So now over here, you can see a lot of things have changed. I removed all of the fields from the user and post type, and we changed the annotation up here to a strawberry Django type. And in that case, it tells strawberry Django to actually take all of the fields from the post model and put them into the GraphQL schema. There's some static mappers, for example, for the foreign keys, for the char fields, and for the text fields, which are mapped to appropriate GraphQL scalers in the GraphQL schema. And the most magical thing about this is that you don't have to care about data resolving anymore either. Because now you can just plug in that strawberry Django field into your query type, and everything we have done before to fetch a user by its ID or to fetch a list of users is automatically handled for you by the framework. I'll show you that in a second. Basically, having a look at our control flow from before again, all of this glue code you had to write before, you can remove it with strawberry Django. You don't need a user service or a specific user resolver for your example anymore. It will be handled for you by the framework. Instead, you plug it in and you get some new features like query optimizations. So if you look at the query before, you had two separate queries which were called, and that is kind of inefficient. You want to use or leverage the query planner that is provided to you by the database as much as possible. Like, you cannot write a more efficient query planner in your business logic than is already present in any database you're using. And frameworks like Strawberry Django are able to read the GraphQL query to analyze what fields you requested, which relationships need to be joined onto the query, and generate a corresponding SQL query out of it to actually optimize the way you fetch your data. And it's all automatically done in the background. You don't have to do anything for it. The next feature you just get for free is a pagination interface. Basically, if you know about cursor-based pagination, it's all implemented there. You could also add other pagination styles and flavors and have that automatically generated for you. Another nice feature is automated filtering, because at least I also have a lot of struggles with adding a lot of filters to my API, because it's kind of annoying. It's very simple. You have to edit in all of the layers in your usual code base. And with Strawberry Django, all the filters that are available on your SQL model are automatically available in your API if you choose to do so. For example, here I can filter all users by a username that starts with Eric, and then that will work. One of the nice things about Strawberry Django is that you can also automatically create CRUD mutations. Basically create, update, delete mutations, which insert the entities based on the database schema. So with this, you have already covered a large part of basic application functionality, like reading data, reading lists of data, and modifying the data. But many applications have custom requirements. You don't want any type to have any filter available, or maybe any field in your database should be accessible. For example, a password hash, if you store it in your database for some reason, shouldn't really be accessible in the API. And that is where customization plays an important role. And in Strawberry Django, it's really easy to do that. Over here, you can see our post type again, and I've added the fields back. However, I haven't added them back exactly as in the example in the beginning. You can see here, I added the title field, but I annotated the type of the title field as auto. And auto just tells the framework to resolve the type based on the schema type in the database. I wanted to modify the content field to a type called markdown, just to signify that this requires some additional parsing. And I can do it as simple as changing the type here, and the framework will automatically still resolve it back to the database type. Another thing I can do is use other nice features of Strawberry, like automatic handling of permissions, and add them to the fields in the database, and it will be resolved for you. So it's really fluent, the kind of customization you can do, from a purely database-oriented type to some type with a little bit of business logic. You choose how much you want to add. And the next important part after customization is extension of your API. Right? Maybe sometimes the database type is not enough. You need some custom logic on top of it. And that's why extensibility is very important to do easily in such frameworks. In this example, you can see that I added a resolver for a post caption to the post type. And as you can see, you can just use the data provided in the database model inside of these resolvers. For example, here the caption is just the title with the current date. And I can access all of the database fields in these resolvers and do not have to worry about any missing data not being present. So far so good. We've now talked about an extensible approach to generate your or derive your GraphQL schema from a database schema, right? You are starting off with a Strawberry code base, you have your web server hooked up, and you have all of the configuration already present, and then you plug in Strawberry Django and the Django ORM to actually infer any models and infer this database schema from those models. And there are cases where you don't actually want that or you don't need that. You just have your database and you want to get a GraphQL schema that actually enables you to do what you want. And this case is actually very important because in many, there's a lot of use cases nowadays where, for example, GraphQL APIs are used in LLMs or AI use cases in general, and you just want access to the data but not to the raw database. And this is where tools like PostGraphile come in very handily, because they enable you to create a GraphQL schema just from a Postgres database without any additional framework or wiring you have to do around it. You just install it and it works, but still it's as extensible as the approach I've shown you before. And what PostGraphile does is it reads the Postgres schema that is stored in the database to automatically generate the API. So you don't even have to define any models. It's all automatically read from the schema. And similar to Strawberry Django, CRUD mutations and all of the nice logic and the nice extras like filtering, pagination are added automatically for you, and you can extend it even further using a wide variety of plugins. I want to give you a little comparison. It's going to be a bit harder to read, but between Strawberry Django and PostGraphile. So on the one hand, in Strawberry Django, you see I added some documentation to the post type, and I also added some other information. For example, I might have excluded a field here. And all of this is handled via smart tags in the database in PostGraphile. So up here, for example, you can see the first tag is a comment, which I add on the posts table. And basically, this will also lead to the post table being documented in the GraphQL schema. When I want to exclude fields, again, it's a smart tag. It's the omit tag. And here I am excluding a certain private field from the post type. By omitting it for reading from the API. And you can do the same for filters, pagination, or actually relationships, and maybe even whole types in your database schema that you don't want exposed in the API. And also business logic is possible to be implemented. Like down here, the caption of the post is just represented via a SQL, via a Postgres function, which again resolves data, and you can automatically plug that into your schema. So let's compare the two approaches on a basic level. Both are very extensible. You start with a set of features that every application needs and you are good to go in minutes. But the main difference is that Strawberry Django really requires you to have your Strawberry app around it and your Python ecosystem of tools to get it going, while PostgreSQL is up and running right away. You can, however, extend it and extend it with Node.js code to actually add more business logic, add more custom features, and extend the schema, but it just works right out of the box. Another big difference is that PostgreSQL really focuses on having business logic in the database, utilizing as much of the database as possible, or the database features as possible, while Strawberry Django is really focused on the features that are present within an ORM, so basically the database schema and the relationships you define. And another difference is that PostgreSQL is just made for Postgres, and Strawberry Django supports all SQL implementations which are supported by the Django ORM. But if you ask me, in nowadays world, it's probably always best to use Postgres for most use cases, and it's not much of a miss to not have support for example, MySQL in those applications. So let's talk about a few common pitfalls. I get a lot of questions about migrations. For example, many people are concerned when coupling your database a bit tighter to your schema on how to do migrations. And actually, my answer to that is pretty straightforward. When you're doing migrations in an application, especially in a distributed system, you also have to worry about not breaking things based on the consumers of that database, right? You have to be very careful if you're removing fields, changing field types, and you have to do that incrementally. For example, if you change the name of a field, you have to keep the old name there. And with tools like Strawberry Django and PostgreSQL, it's very easy to add smart tags or custom logic to change field names and map to the old field first, and after the migration is completed, map data to the new field, so you don't have to make an API breaking change. Because while the GraphQL schema is mapped to the database schema, there are ways to customize it, and there are ways to actually direct the data to the point where you want it, and to use the database columns that you're actually interested in. Right. This was mostly focused on GraphQL for now. Since I'm working GraphQL, I'm a bit biased, and I'm probably telling you the best way to do this is via GraphQL, but there's great tools out there to do this in REST APIs as well. First example is Postgres, which enables you to build a REST API from your Postgres databases. And for example, in the Python ecosystem, there's a tool like SQL Model, which will also decrease the amount of workload you have or the amount of layers you have to go through to map a database model to an API model that is actually validated. So, sum up, database-driven APIs derive an API schema from the database schema, and they generate API types from the native types in your database. And tools like PostgreSQL can leverage native database features to use your technology as efficiently as possible without having to duplicate any types throughout the layers of your application. And by doing that, you are able to iterate rapidly. I told you, you just have to start the tool and the API is going, and then you can start with customization. Usually, when you're developing an application, you're adding a new feature, for example, a posts feature, you first of all need to edit everywhere, you code it, and then at some point you can integrate it. With PostgreSQL or Strawberry Django, everything is there immediately. So when we're talking about database-driven API tools, we should also talk about when not to use database-driven API tools. And for me, the answer is really depends on the kind of application you're building. And I really see it as a spectrum from pure CRUD applications on the one hand, which just have data you put into the database, that's create, update, and delete mutations to modify that data. And on the other hand, there's very behavior-centric apps, very domain-driven applications with lots of business logic, custom code inside. And I think for pure CRUD applications, it's obvious. Try it out, see if it works for you, and it can save you a lot of time and bring you a lot of features, make your API greater than it ever used to be. However, I don't think it is only a good choice for pure CRUD applications. I think the separation point is somewhere around here, because from my experience, even very behavior-centric applications with a lot of domain logic contain a large part that is purely CRUD for many types that are in the application. And for this part of the application, you can still benefit largely from using a database-driven API tool. So Why should you use database-driven API tools? Basically, you can utilize your technologies effectively, save a lot of time, and get going with minimal boilerplate or glue code in your application. Additionally, you can make sure your database schema is at all times consistent to your API schema, where you want it to be consistent, and you don't have any duplicated types you need to work on. And this, all in all, enables you to innovate rapidly and build nice tools faster and easier than ever before. Thank you. Over here you find a QR code to my LinkedIn. Feel free to contact me with any questions, and here you can find two links to the docs of the tools I presented. Any questions? Yes.
Is there any, or are you aware of any kind of authorization or access level management from any of these tools?
So, I haven't gone too deep into this because the lack of time, but on PostgreSQL you can do authorization also within Postgres. There's a good feature. You can ask Benji back there for more details. He's the maintainer of PostgreSQL. And for Strawberry SQL, for Strawberry Django and Strawberry SQL Alchemy and all those database tools, it's very easy to just plug it into the existing Strawberry permission system that we have going. Yes. Yes.
You talked about migrations. I wanted to know about provisioning.
Okay, so since this talk is more focused on GraphQL and the general recommendation in GraphQL is to not version your entire schema, but to keep your schema evolving and backwards compatible as much as possible over time, there's no real versioning strategy that I have in mind, like right from the bat. It would depend on the specific use case, probably. General recommendation I can give is to version by field, so basically add a new type next to your old type if you want to make breaking changes to the API schema. Yes.
Yeah. Are you just going in the opposite direction of what GraphQL originally wanted to extract from the database? And I wonder if I try to kind of attempt, in the end I always end up having the two schema diverge, and then I can't use the tools anymore, and I end up in a huge mess.
I like the question, because when many people first discover GraphQL, they think, oh, nice, it's a big database I can use to access all of my data without limits. And this is not what GraphQL should be. These tools might enable you to do that. What I maybe didn't mention here enough is that you should still stick to certain best practices. Do not expose everything. Do not expose every relationship and every field in your database schema. Expose the data that is necessary to deliver your application the way you want it to be delivered. And that is the big advantage of these tools. You are able to build a database, like a database access tool, out of them because they are so powerful. But with great power comes great responsibility. And after all, at some point, you really need to, if you stick to best practices, you will not run into these risks. Right. Yeah. Any more questions? Well, then, thanks everyone. There's some stickers.